Boker Tov world. My goodness gracious. We actually have a whole brand new world opening up before us today. A new Masechet. Quite amazing. Okay, Rabotai. We start with our opening to Masechet Sotah. And just like the Gemara is interested in figuring out what in the world Sotah is doing here, and we're going to see that it relates directly to Masechet Nazir, that's because we find in the Torah that it puts together these two parshias, one after the other, from which we learn Kol HaRoeh Sotah B'Kiyum Kula Yazir Atzmo Min HaYayin. But we're going to find many, many issues that interrelate these Masechtas. By the way, the first one is so curious, which is the standard that there's always Ramazim to the upcoming Masechet. And just like there is in every closing of a perek, there's already intimations of what's coming the next perek. Then we had all of these mishnayos, one after the other, about raglayim ladavar, and the whole deal of seita revolves around raglayim ladavar, as we're going to see. That's the opening. But also, all of the issues of language are found over here. The things that are ne'amorim b'chol lashon, issues that have to do with midas adin and midah keneged midah, and the idea of reliability, ne'amanut, which of course is fundamental, the whole concept of sota. And so therefore, it speaks about the breakdowns in relationships, which is why at the end of our Masechet, we have the awful descriptions of our own times, of what's going to happen at the end of these breakdowns, in which families become torn apart, and children are parents' worst nightmare, all of things that have just become so taken for granted that that's the way the world is, that at the time that they were said, they seemed insane. And many other issues like Hakel, the writing on the stones, that are all elements of Ne'amonis and keeping alive our experiences from over the Dairai. So we'll see that all of these issues really integrate very deeply Saita into the elements of Seder Noshim that go back to the integration of language into Noshim. This is like classic. So it's really the closing of the three Masechtot that are involved in language and in these specific relationships. We'll talk more about this, Bezrat Hashem. We're zeichah to do a siyum together on Saita. But meanwhile, just to keep in mind the issues of the opening of the Masechet, which are focused specifically on the real parsha of Saita itself in Nasai. So over there we have some very fascinating inyanim that are written clearly not in the correct order, and we're going to go be analyzing the psukim as we continue. But we know basically three things that we determine from the parsha over here that we're going to start discussing. And that is the fundamental idea of a seita is Dafka, where her husband had said to her something that was kine et ishto, whatever that means. We're going to have to define what that is, but he was mikane et ishto. We're not talking about just a woman that we have suspicions about her having had relations with another person. So whatever that kine et ishto means is the topic of our Mishnah, hamikane, which is why it uses the word hamikane instead of saying somebody is mazir et ishto, matre et ishto, because we're coming to explain the meaning of the word vikine et ishto. And then it talks about that she was alone with this guy, and it keeps talking about it in ways that make it clear we don't really know what's going on. Because first it says, v'shachav ota, v'shachav ish ota shechvat zera, v'ne'alam me'enei isha. And there it says, v'nistera, so there's obviously some aspect of being alone with the guy, in seter, v'hinitma'a. And then it repeats the whole thing, it says, so we obviously don't really know what's going on, which means that this idea of a sota is an iser that applies whether or not there actually was an iser in terms of the relationship that she had with this man. She may never have had any relationship with him, that which means that until we establish otherwise, the very fact that there was kinui and stira, kinei tishto, and, as it says, v'nistira, then the fact that v'hi nitma'a o lo nitma'a is irrelevant. She is now called a sota, which means that she is asura al ba'ala, and that means that she's also in every way. She's not allowed to eat truma, and so on and so forth. Until we know otherwise. So how can we know otherwise? Well, we can know otherwise, obviously, through the bedikah of the seita. I mean, that's the main thing that the Torah points out. Of course, we could know otherwise by having witnesses that say that we know for a fact that she did sleep with this guy. Or she herself says, it's true, I did sleep with this guy. Now, that takes off the din of sota in terms of needing to have the drinking of these waters, hamayim, hamaorarim, very strange kind of thing, which we take the mal or bomal to be a me'ila in HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well, who is part of their relationship. And that, by the way, we will see immediately in this first daf, that the reason, I mean, it's not open in the Gemara, but it's clear when you're sensitive to what the Parsha is talking about, that the Mala Boma, which is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the relationship, which is why we utilize the actual dirt from the Mishkan itself, from the Migdash itself, in the Mayim HaMa'orim, because that is the presence of the Shekhinah within their relationship. So then that Mala Boma'al is a part of the what it is that creates the general idea of sota that has to do with the Egel Azov, where Moshe Rabbeinu was Bedek HaSotais, and why it is that all of the other sugyas later on that have to do with the ne'emanut of our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, like those Avanim, or like Hakel, and so on, are brought up over here, and why they're so central. And so all of these issues are actually right away evident to an aware reader when he reads the Parsha, and need to be understood, each one of them in its place. When we say v'kineyat ishto, what does that mean? What constitutes a kineyat ishto? When we say that she was nistera, what does that mean? How long would she have to be nisteret? Do we need witnesses that she was nisteret? How about if the husband himself saw that she was nisteret? How about if the husband suspected her and saw that she was nisteret without giving her a kinui that anybody else knows about, and so on and so forth? These are all very serious issues, which you would never believe it, but as we'll see it by the end of today's daf, which are extremely relevant bizman hazeh, and which become tremendous issues la'alocha bizman hazeh on a weekly basis. So that's quite shocking, and also the Gemara will discuss it today. Okay, so let us begin our wonderful new journey of exploration. We can see right away we're going to have trouble. We already have the Kayanim who are active in the Seita, starting immediately trying to give me my imam or him. I didn't do anything. My gosh, look at this. My goodness gracious. You can see even from the color of that cup, it must contain my... Never mind. And I don't even have my support system here. Akiva's hidden. Gavi's not here. My gosh.
This is the sota cup. This is a cup of all types of ancient languages and scripts.
Oh. Not only that, it was also Barnea's own archaeological discovery that was the original cup that they used to use to give all of the seitas water. It's worth an immense amount of money if anybody wants to put in a bid. He's open to bits. Okay, so it's one of Barnea's favorite tourist sites. So let us begin. The delicious Mishnah. Here we go. So, Hamikaneli Ishto, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Mikanela al Pishnayim. Now, this is very strange. I mean, what do we open up? Hamikaneli Ishto. And then we have Rabbi Eliezer Omer Mikanela al Pishnayim. I mean, we could have just said, Rabbi Eliezer Amir Mekanei Adam Lishto Al Pishnayim. I mean, what's the Ha Mekanei Lishto, and they're repeating it again. we're going to see that the Gemara is actually, at least the way Rashi understands it, the Gemara is actually medayik this lashon as being extremely meaningful in the entire sugya to be spoken about in a moment. So what consists of a kinoi? The Rebbe Eliezer Omer, Mikanela al Pishnaim. He needs to have two Edim when he is Mikane. Now note, this does not mean he needs two Edim to establish the fact to the satisfaction of the Bezdin that he was Mikaneher. It means much more than that. It means that the definition of Kinui is that he's Mikanela al Pishnaim. In other words, if we know for a fact, the husband knows for a fact, that he warned her, don't be alone with this guy, and there were no witnesses, does that warning constitute a kina as far as he's concerned? Because he knows the truth. He doesn't need witnesses. And according to that, he would be usher on that woman if, in fact, she was an hysteret. We're going to see that according to the way Rebbe Eliezer understands it here, that if there were no kinui al pishnayim, there is no kinui, period. The fact that he happens to know about it is irrelevant. Know about what? That you had an argument? That's not called kinui in the Torah. So in other words, Rebbe Eliezer is defining what a kinui is, not just how we know about it. So we'll see that this is not so pashut and actually forms the basis of a lot of modern shilas. So mikalela apishnayim, and then mashka even apiedachad, or apiatzmo. If he himself saw her after there is a real kinui apishnayim, then he is able to be mashkai, can bring her to the Beis HaMikdash in order to go through the drinking. Of course, he can't force her to do that. She always has either the option of saying, well, I'm not interested in getting into that. You know, the heck with it. You know, give me a get and I'll get out of here without my ksuva. But I certainly don't want this public spectacle. She could say that. She could say, it's true. I've been sleeping with that guy. Okay, fine. The same situation. So then he'll divorce her without a ketuvah. But in the event that she is insisting that she never did anything wrong and that she wants to remain with him, so then he can be mashka. And that way he can establish that she is indeed mutera to him. Dvorah, please mute. And that way...
So you really could really explain, it seems to be two stages. The one is Makaneh, the second is Mashaket.
Mashka.
Interdependent of each other? Or are they separate?
Interdependent of each other is an oxymoron. They're independent of each other or they're interdependent. And that's not a function of accent. No, they are two parts of a process. In the event that there was a legal kinoi, which we just saw according to Rebbe Eliezer means in front of two Edim, it's to establish not the facts, but to create the kinoi. And if there weren't two Edim, there's no kinoi. And if there's no kinoi, then there's no mashka. You can't bring a woman to the Beis HaMikdash and say, I suspect my wife of adultery, let's use Barnea's famous cup, right? You can't do that. The whole idea is only where there was a kinui. And then the Torah gives this special thing. We'll see that this may be another concept of the idea of Nazirus in the sense that a person can create a special aura of Kedusha, which requires dealing within the Beis HaMikdash, and without that aura, it's none of our business what's going on with your wife's faithfulness, you see? And that is part of the interrelationship of the Nazir Seita Inyonim. The Kinui, as we'll see, may be the creation of a space for Hashka, in which case it's very similar to Nazir, and that would explain why it's here after Nazir, even though in the Torah, the Naziris is a result of someone seeing the Seita. So the two are very interrelated. But we'll be getting into that, Bezrat Hashem, as we get, if we're Zohar, to get to the Siyam of Seita, we'll be able to see the deeper interrelationships, which are really quite astounding. Okay, so therefore, according to Rebbe Eliezer, even once he has that established status of a woman who is in a state of kinoi, then even if he knows himself that she was in hysteret, he would be able to be mashka. And of course, in that case, he would have to prove by the eidim that he really had been mashka. So, because that's also a function of two eidim. It's not only to establish mashka, which is something outside of the din of eidus in terms of testimony. It's the normal testimony is that I need two witnesses to know that this happened. Fine. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Mikanela al Pishnaima. Yes, and that we agree. But I say you can only be Mashka al Pishnaim. You need two witnesses that she was Nisteret. And therefore, if you don't have it, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if the husband says, well, I know that she was Nisteret, so then she becomes Asura, which is Mashma that Alibi to Rabbi Yoshua, it would be Mutter. Even if he knew himself that I know I saw her this third, why do I need witnesses at all? Doesn't matter. The problem is that the Rambam paskins that even Aliba the Rabbi Yeshua, the only reason that we need two witnesses in terms of the stira is to involve the Beis Hamikdash and the Beis Din in Ashka'at HaSotah. It has nothing to do with the husband's own Isser, so that if he knows, then he's still going to be Asser, which means that according to the Rambam, Rabbi Yoshua also is talking about two witnesses, not that are our business to let us know what happened, but two witnesses to establish the reality for Hashka, you see? So both the Kinoi and the Stira, according to the Rambam, are totally consistent. In that the witnesses are not only there for what they usually are, to let people know, they're also there in order to establish what the reality would be, and this would be part of the question between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Fine. So according to the Rambam, even according to Rabbi Yeshua, if I don't need the two witnesses to let me know anything, because I am the husband. And therefore, if I know, I know. And in which case, Rabbi Yeshua is only saying, you want to use the mashkeh, the seiter, which is the special din that the Torah gave you? For that, the Torah only gave it if it's established, al pi shnei eidim, which according to him may also mean that it creates the state in which the Beis Din and the Beis HaMikdash are involved. Okay, this is a tremendously important issue right at the beginning of the Masechet, to understand how this works, the issue of Hashka and the issue of Kinui. So therefore, let's just get clear this Machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua both agree that in order to create Kinui, you need to have two witnesses. The Machlokas is whether in order to be Mashka, the way the Rambam learns, in order to be Mashka, do you need two witnesses? According to Rabbi Eliezer, you do not. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, you do. Then we have the third issue. What is the status of a husband who knows that she was nisteret? Does the kinui create a din of a seita on a woman who was nisteret? And therefore, if the husband knows about it, it would be the equivalent of his knowing that she was sleeping with somebody. And therefore, she would be asur on him. Of course, it's not going to help him not to pay the ksuva. I mean, he can come into court and said, I walked in, I found her sleeping with this guy. He said, it's all very nice that you say so. And therefore, you are usher to continue to live with her. But that would be mitam shavya nafshe chaticha di isura. He created on himself a problem. So therefore, we'll force him to get divorced. But what does that have to do with getting out of paying the ksuva, which is a monetary issue, which requires to aid him? That also we need to see the interrelationship of those two things. Okay, so these are all, you can see that the issues here are really quite complex. Now, when we say is mikane, so what do we mean that he was mikane? So let's imagine a case where a guy would say to his wife, I don't want you to have anything to do with this guy. You've got to stop talking to him. You talk too much to him. No. In the end, this is the way the Gemara is going to explain the Mishnah. It doesn't sound like it's what the Mishnah is saying. But this is what the Mishnah ends up saying, according to the Gemara. So if he says, don't talk with this guy so much, and she does, it wouldn't make any difference. Who cares, right? So vidibrahimo, adaini muteret leveta, umuteret lecho betruma. So the fact that she's on the phone with this guy doesn't matter. Now, in reality, the way we understand the Mishnah is the fact that she's alone with this guy in the phone booth doesn't matter either. Of course, the phone booths weren't made out of glass in those days. They didn't have much glass in those days. So the phone booths were actually a makom seder. Okay. So if she's alone with the guy, when he said, do not talk to him, she's still mutter. Even though that's not what the Mishnah seems to be saying. We have to put in those words. If all he said was, don't talk to him, then we don't care what she did with him. But there's no din of kinui because that talking is not a kinui. On the other hand, if he said to her, so in that case, she would still be mutter. So in other words, you need to put in the words, vafilu nistera imo. She would still be muteret lebeita, and she would still be muteret lechol betruma. And now you got to put in the words, but if he said to her, do not be alone with him, and then nichtasa imo lebeita seiter, and she was there long enough for them to actually have had intercourse, shataimo kedei tuma, then asura leveita, she becomes usher to her husband, she's asura lechol betruma. And what happens if the husband died before there was a chance to bring her in? So as we saw the sugyas of Saita in Yevamos, he mate choletzet velo mityabemet. And what's interesting is, you know those words, choletzet velo mityabemet, how often we had them in Yevamos, right? They were like a motif, you know, constantly the choletzet velo mityabemet. So the Meiri writes a very interesting thing, that in his days, when they finished Yevamot, they would start learning Sota. He doesn't explain why, but it seems clear that it seems to be a direct continuation of that theme that we find so much of in Yevamos. Well, they couldn't let go. We got another Choletzet V'lo Mityabemet. What the heck? What's this? Right? Okay. So that's very sweet, but it's a completely different organization than the organization of Rabbeinu HaKodesh, which is actually the Gemara's next question. Says the Gemara, hold on a minute. This doesn't seem very reasonable. Didn't we just finish Nazir? Why in the world are we going from Nazir to Saita? I don't understand. What was there about Nazir that relates to the din of Saita? Well, now this is very strange. As Tosus points out, because remember, that actually the Gemara asked at the beginning of Nazir the same question, why in the world did we mention Nazir in this Seder? Nazir? What does a Nazir have to do with Seder Nashim? I mean, the Nazir belongs to Seder Nashim. It's mostly an issue of Karbonas and so on. I mean, what is it doing here? And the Gemara answered over there that the reason that it says Nazir and Seder Nashim is because of the fact that the Torah actually puts together the Parsha of Nazir and Saita. So because of that, we have Nazir in Seder Nashim. And then over here, the Gemara asks, hey, how come it says Saita after Nazir? And it says, well, Rebbe says that Kol Haroya Saita Bekukulo Yazir Atzvim Nayayin, so therefore we put Saita into after Nazir. I don't understand. So what a tautology. Because of Saita, we said Nazir. And I said, because of Nazir, we said Saita. What are you talking about? The Tosus points this out, that it's certainly a little bit strange, isn't it? So Tosus says, no, of course not. There's two completely different issues. The first question was that we were asking over there, what is Nazir doing in this Seder? That was the general question. Why did Rebbe include it in Seder Nashim? So we said it's included in Seder Nashim because of Saita. Fine. Then we have this other issue of why is it in this order, in which after the way in which we had already, we had to put in Nazir, so we put in Saita. And because of that, the Gemara says, what is the order for? But then, what is the order? This is not very well explained by the answer. Because the Tanya, it's Kidderebi. The Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Laman Ispacha, Pashat Nazir, Le Pashat Sota, Lomar Lacha, Shekola, Roes, Sota, Bekil Kugla, Yazirat Ramanayayin. So if somebody was witness to the way that a Seita was treated in the Beis HaMikdash, and it's such a bizoyan, it's such a spectacle, and she's so, like, low in terms of her exposure, we tear her dress and rip off her sheitel and so on. I mean, so all of that is a real kilkel. And because of that, it must be as the Baal Shem Tov points out, that you see from here, that the things that you see that make an impression on you, and you think, oh God, why did I have to see that? There's a reason why you had to see that. And you have to deal with what it was that you were forced to stick your nose into a toilet bowl. You need to deal with that. Okay, so then that means you should deal with that, and you have to avoid ever getting into a situation that would be similar to a seita. You should be a zirat's woman, a yayin, because we view cocktail parties as being the beginning of the end. So therefore, a zirat's woman, a yayin. Okay. But then, of course, you aren't...
The question begs the order.
Patience. So then says the Gemara, but then that is an absurd answer, because then it's the order is the opposite. You just said, I asked you, we just finished Nazir. Why are we talking about a Seita? And you tell me because it says in the Pasuk, Kol Haroya Seita B'Kukula. So then it should say Seita and then say Nazir. I'm so confused. So you're not answering the question that I asked you. So then Lisnei Seita V'Hadar Lisnei Nazir. No. Okay. This is a global issue, says the Gemara. We need to take a look at the structure of the Seder Nashim. We've established that we need to put Nazir in Seder Nashim. Fine. Now the question is, how do we create the most logical local Seder? So therefore, what we do is we do like this. We said Ksuvas. Now you'll remember that in Ksuvas, we have a great deal of discussion of what the din is if a person discovers that his wife makes nedarim all the time, or where he makes a tnai, that any boy be isha nederet, and whether the heter nedarim would then take off that. A lot of questions. Does she lose her ksuva? So we spoke about an entire parak of also the impact that a person has by making a neder of hana on ishto, hamadir et ishto. So that was the whole parak of hamadir. So once we had ksuvas, and once we established in ksuvas such a central place in the Perek HaMadir to issues of Nedarim, we needed to first deal with Nedarim logistically, because that was the most logical next step. So once we said HaMadir, we already started talking about Nedarim. And then I did it on the Nedarim. We're not going to interrupt the whole flow now. At the end of Nedarim, to first put in Seita and then put in Nazir as a pair, because, I mean, the whole Indian of Nazir is a particular facet of Nedarim. Ishki Yidar Neder Nazir Lahazir. I mean, it would be crazy to forget about the issues of Neder when we get to Nazir and then have to go back and reconstruct them. So therefore, we said Nazir at that point, but we kept in mind the whole time that this is just a local aberration of the essential way that the Torah is establishing it, which is the Kol Haroya Seita B'Kukula. So, I mean, Lamaisa, we have just as much an excuse, says Tosfos, to put Seita after Nedarim, because, I mean, there's so many issues in Nedarim that have to do with the way that a woman is relating to her husband. The whole halacha of hafaras habal, the whole halacha of what things are beino leveina. I mean, wouldn't you say the words beino leveina conjure up issues of seita in your mind? You know, things between the two of us. So why didn't we do it over there? And so Tosa says, because it makes more sense to stick with the seder of the psukim, and therefore, since it says the seita, not the Seder, but I mean the connections in the Psukim. And since the Torah makes the connection between Nazir and Seita, so we'd rather work things out in a way in which we have the Nazir Seita preserved rather than doing it agav Nedarim. Okay. there's much to be discussed, I'm sure, as you could see yourself, but we'll move on until we get more into the inyanim of the Masechet to see what's involved over here. Because, as I mentioned earlier, many of the issues of the tripartite Masechet, Nedarim, Nazir, Saita, are brought to a head in Saita, which is the central issue of language, the relationship of Lashon HaKodesh to language in general, and the way that language forms bonds at the end, which is basically takes us all the way back to the beginning of the interrelationship of Nedarim to Seder Nashim, as we mentioned before. So the truth is, as I said, when we see the entire thing in full perspective, it's a glorious multi-leveled construct that Rebbe achieved over here. And I also pointed out to you that there's all kinds of sneaky little interconnections, such as the end of the Mishnah, Chaletzet v'lo mityabemet, or as we're going to see, Sheraglayim Ladovar, which is the entire end of Masechet Nazir, which suddenly pops up as the main issue in Saita. And so there's a lot of very curious other hints at what's coming. But let's take...
Yes, absolutely.
The point of don't talk is itself striking. What do we have? I mean, like, why don't we say, don't play tiddlywinks with this guy? That's not the point. The issue is the element of Dibur, very beautifully noted by our very own Dibur expert, Barnea Bilshan. So you'll notice, says the Gemara, that it said, Hamikane. Now, when it says, if someone was Mikane Leishto, what do you mean, if someone was? That must mean that, well, it's not the right thing to do, but if the jerk went ahead and did it anyway, so this is the halacha. So Tosis points out there's lots of places where it uses the hay, and it doesn't mean dafka b'diavat. So why all of a sudden are we cracking down on this Mishnah to mean b'diavat? So Tosis points out that Rashi actually went out of his way to explain that the real point is what we mentioned at the beginning of the Mishnah. It's a very strange way to speak. Hamekane et ishto, Rebbe Eliezer omer mikane la'al pishmo. We're talking about a mikane. I mean, to either leave out Rebbe Eliezer omer mikane la, or just say Rebbe Eliezer omer al pishnayim, or say Rebbe Eliezer omer mikane adam l'ishto al pishnayim. But to double the language of hamekane et ishto and then to start once again mentioning mikane al pishnayim, that's the point. It's not simply that we mention the hay in front of the mikane. It's the fact that we use all this extra language, which is unnecessary. So that's the point. So mashma davka b'diavad, but lechatchila lo, which means that our Tana is making a very strong point of you are doing the wrong thing, and you should not be mekana ishtecha. Asur lekanot. There's no better way to ruin a relationship than to start voicing suspicions to your wife. So what are you supposed to do? I mean, isn't this whole idea of mekane, is that's not a way of ensuring fidelity, if not peace? What's better? So, as the Tzitzis HaRosh puts it, fidelity without peace ain't worth a damn. Just divorce her. Okay, that's one approach. Obviously, we're going to see that there may be other issues that are involved over here. But we'll talk about them in a moment. So obviously, the Tana holds that it's osur lekanot. Omer Reb Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, ki avipatach Reish Lakish besota, amar hachi. Reish Lakish used to open up his discussion, pasach lo pitcha lahay pashata mihacha. And that is that ein bezavgin lo la'adam isha, ela lefi ma'asav. A man gets the wife worthy of him. So obviously, for you to go around being Mr. Pure of Heart, and how dare you show such signs of infidelity, why don't you work on yourself, jerk? Then your wife will maybe be better. Now, the question is, of course, what do you mean? When I married her, I was the same jerk that she is. But I've been working on myself, and now I'm a mensch. So now this happens very often, you know. One of the couples does tshuva, and then they get divorced because the other one doesn't want to come along, right? So that would be, in this case, the guy says, look, I got exactly the wife I deserved, but she now doesn't deserve me. That's what I'm saying, right? So Reish Lakish deals with that issue as well. And this is my own idiosyncratic. I don't want to tell you that this is the way everybody understands the Gemara, okay? But this, it's my editorial over here. So since it's Ela Lefi Ma'asav, Shenema, Ki Lo Yanuach Shevet HaResha Al Goral HaTzadikim, that a person who is a tzaddik, into his goral, into his world of fate, of what goes on in his life, absolutely, there would be no way in which people that are Semech, Shevet is something that you carry to beat around, Shevet Aresha, that doesn't get in to the lot of a tzaddik. Okay, so therefore, it's clearly that you had an Isha Lefi Ma'asav. Very difficult to do that. I mean, to put two people together that have the same maisim and that are royal if he maisim. I mean, that's, how does that happen? Very difficult for HaKadosh Baruch Hu kavayochel. Shenemar, Elohim moshiv yechidim baita, motzi asrim bekosharot. Perfect for this month, which of course is the Pashtus, which is referring to Yitzias Mitzrayim, Motzias Sirim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took out those who were imprisoned in slavery, and he brought them out, because Sharot, as the Gemara Darshan's elsewhere, a Chodesh that is kosher liYitziah, because, I mean, you don't want to go out in the winter, you know, and it's very uncomfortable. You don't want to go out in the summer, very uncomfortable in the desert in the summer. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose best time, springtime. Perfect. Nice temperatures, beautiful breezes, lovely to go out of Mitzrayim, and that's because Sharot. Okay, but we're darshaning it over here. Moshiv Yechidim. He takes two individuals, Yechidim, beautiful Lashon, two separate people. They're all by themselves. Baita, he makes a house out of two people that are not connected to each other. And that refers to, actually, the Yitzias Mitzrayim itself, which is the Kosharot, and therefore it's the same as Kriyas Yamsuf. So that must be that it's just as tough as Kriyas Yamsuf, right? Apparently. So what is the relationship to Kriyas Yamsuf over here? So I think the pshat is like this, that Rabbi Yochanan is coming to explain what the point is of Rabbi Reish Lakish is saying over here, that Ein Mizavgin Lo La'adam Isha, that this is part of Rabbi Yochanan's own shita, and that's why Rabbi Bar Chanan explained it. The difficulty, Kekriyas Yamsuf, Vasep is Kekriyas Yamsuf. I mean, we're so used to those words, we think it makes sense. What kind of sense does it make? But in Kriyas Yamsuf, remember, the Malachi Ashore set HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What? These jerks you're taking out. Here's Mitzrayim, right, running after them. Elu v'elu, avdei avodah zarah. And we learn out Mamish from Muslim in the Pasuk that they were Omed Bedin at that moment and so on, and it could have been destroyed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers them, Galui v'yadua lefanai shatidim elu l'kabel terebar sinai, etc., etc. That's why it's kosher Kriyas Yamsuf. In other words, Ahanhoga, which is based on matching current values with future actions, is the Kriyas Yamsuf. And therefore, the point that Reish Lakish is making is that the Moshav Yechidim Baita means that you were given a wife that will be a reflection. Both of you share the same type of fundamental vision and drives, and that therefore, instead of being Mekana her, why don't you get together again, huh? Because all of this was taken into consideration in the beginning, just like Kriyas Yamsuf was. So in this case, you, hubby, are talking like the Malachi Hashareis. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is answering, you know, Mizavdi Malafi Maisav. All right. So that way, you should do other things. But this would be an alternative to the Tosfos HaRosh of saying, just divorce her and get it over with. All right. So maybe there's other ways of dealing the issue. Ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. What Rish Lakish says isn't even true. Oh, my gosh. What happened to Bashert? This is clearly my Basherta. After all, Amrav Yiram Arav, Arbaim Yom Kodem Yetzirat Avlad, Batko Yotzeit V'Yomeret, Bat Ploni L'Ploni, Bayit Ploni L'Ploni, Sada Ploni L'Ploni. It was all predestined. And therefore, how can Rish Lakish claim that it's Lefi Ma'asav? There were no Ma'asim. This is 40 days before the Yetzirat Avlad. What Ma'asim? And we know that to say, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what his Ma'asim will be without there being any present choices is ridiculous, because the whole idea is, remember, that was the whole Gemara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is as, they bring sperm in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is this DNA going to turn into? Fine, says X, Y, Z, but Tzadik V'Rashay doesn't say anything about it. That's completely up to the person to be Becher, so that if that's the case, the point doesn't make, it doesn't mean that they go according to their Maisim. Says the Gemara, true, but it depends. Ha Bezivuk Rishon, Ha Bezivuk Sheni, it depends. If it's, now, everybody seems to take this, even including some of the Rishonim, that this means this is a first marriage and this is a second marriage, which is a little ridiculous, because then it would make Reish Lakish's psicha irrelevant. I mean, he's going to give me a psicha to Saita that is based only on second marriages. Originally, the guy married the woman who was roy to him based on destiny. It's in the stars. We were always meant for each other. Okay, so that Saita is not talking about. Saita is only talking about a case where a guy lost his first wife and then he married again. I mean, that doesn't really make much sense, does it? No. So therefore, we have many approaches, both among the Rishonim, among the Achronim, about what this really means. So there, the pshat that I must tell you that I like the best, even though it's a great-great-grandfather, is the Yaivetz. The Yaivetz pshat is, it means your primary marriage and your secondary marriage. It doesn't mean your first or second marriage. And there is, therefore, there is a marriage written in the stars. But the question is, that's your primary marriage. How many people even know their primary self? Forget about their primary marriage, right? So therefore, you basically are always going to be in a situation where you certainly have to assume that this is a marriage that you managed to screw up royally and get involved with. And therefore, it's your Zivuk Sheni. There's clear rias to this, by the way, because we know that the Gemara says Beferish, that you can always lose your, you know, you have to move fast on a woman because someone else might get her. And what do you mean someone else may get her? Anybody will tell you, and any good chassid will tell you, what do you mean it's Basheret? You know, if someone else got her, that's a proof that she was never meant to be mine. That's all a bunch of bull. The Gemara says not like that. All right. So it's obvious that when we talk about this concept of Basheret, it really is a little ridiculous because it isn't Basheret. Or at least, what are the chances of its being Basharat? Now, there is a beautiful, this is one of the most wonderful Reb Tzadoks that I ever saw. There's a beautiful Reb Tzadok who says, everybody brings, the Maseches Seferim brings, a person will never know whether he's got a Zivug Rishon or a Zivug Sheni. How could he know? Ein yodea davar zeh ela kadosh baruch hu bi'atzma. So therefore, basically, it would still be no geya. Our sukkah, very much, because nobody would know, correct? So Reb Tzadok says, yeah, but there is one way to know. If you like her, why would anybody end up finding chen in his wife, right? Because rotza adam bekav shelo yoter mitisha kabim shel acherim. That's a given. So a person loves their town. They love their town. Gemara talks about these weird stories, right? Where this guy is talking about his wonderful town, they come. We do have a few problems. I mean, the air is totally polluted. We don't have any water, and the temperatures are impossible. But those are minor problems. I mean, look at this wonderful place. Right? Some people do this all the time. Now, they certainly do this with their wives. I mean, walking, oh my God, you're thinking. And this guy says, oh, my wonderful wife did this, and so on and so forth. So how does that happen? So that happens because Rotzadam Bekav Shalom. Oh, so then you know it was really his. And you can't decipher like what's going on because you're talking about things that are written in the stars. Then you know that it's Aziva Grisha. Isn't that adorable? Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm talking a lot today. I'm putting off our limud, but it's just so many sweet issues over here. Okay. So now let's get into the technical details. We have a machlokas according to Rabbi Eliezer. You do the kinui on the shnei edim. That there's no machlokas about. But even one witness is enough to be mashka. And for that matter, even the husband himself. I'll leave it to Rabbi Yeshua. He agrees, yes, we do need kinui on the basis of having shnei edim, but we also need a stira. So notice that the whole machlokas over here is only in terms of kinui v'stira. And even where Rabbi Yeshua is speaking out, you need kinui al pishnayim, you need stira al pishnayim. Doesn't say a word about the idea of a witness that she actually did sleep with this guy. So apparently he does not need to aid him for that. Nobody needs to aid him for that. That's really strange. That when it comes to tum'ah, for a witness to say, I saw her sleeping with this guy, normally that would be the main issue that we would need to aid him for, right? Apishnei dim yakum davar. And this is davar erva. Kira amatzaba davar erva. So we should say davar davar. Means that it should be the same. And yet, it appears that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua agree you do not need two witnesses, and that if we have even one witness comes along, there's nothing that she can do anymore. She cannot be proven innocent. She doesn't drink the me'amorim. She is usher forever on her husband. She does not get her ksuva. She cannot eat truma. And not only that, as we'll see later, she is asura to the putative adulterer. Even though we only have one witness that they ever committed adultery, so why can't he marry her if the husband ends up divorcing her or dying? So where do we get that from? Vitznanami. And the truth is that we're going to have the Mishnah that says beferish that that's true. It says later on, Erechad Omer, Anira iti shenit mit lo hayta shota. There's no way that she could drink after we know that she was tmeah. What do you mean you know she's tmeah? Why would we believe one witness? What's the mocker for such a thing? I mean, eina shota means that we're saying that the Torah never gave her the option of drinking. So minio raita, minolan tmeah min eid echad. Where do we have an idea ever in the Torah that one witness is believed for anything? The Tana Rabbanan. It says over here in the pasuk. Let's go over the parsha. Ish, ish, kitis teishto, umoala boma. Now, the moala boma cannot mean that she really went ahead and slept with somebody. I mean, you can't start off and make a statement like that. So therefore, as the Mefarshim explained, the moala boma is the very inappropriateness of there being too much dilly-dallying between these two people. When her husband said, not that itself is a sota. That is not the way that normal people would behave. If you know that your husband is upset about the relationship, then why would you be alone with it? That's a given, a mala boma. So then, v'shachavi shota shechvat zera, v'ne'alam me'nei shavinistra v'initma, v'eid einba. Now get these words. Eid einba, v'hi lo nitvasa. She wasn't raped. What do you mean she wasn't raped? She wasn't anything. No, so that's the point. We're making the worst assumption here, right? We're saying, Eid ein ba, but we know she wasn't raped. I mean, so how does those two things go hand in hand? If you don't have any witnesses, and why are you talking about whether she was raped or not, if she wasn't anything? So therefore, what it must mean, when it says, Ve'eid ein ba, it means, and we don't have two witnesses, meaning not the aid ein ba, but rather edut ein ba. Remember that the word aid is often used not as a human witness, but rather as a clear indication, right? So for instance, we use the word aid on a bedika cloth. It's called an aid because it proves whether there was blood in the intercourse or not, right? So that's called aid. Okay, so over here also it says the aid in, but it doesn't mean there was no person. It means we don't have any aidus, anything to rely on. So when it says aid, that means we don't have to aid him, and therefore we don't have anything we can rely on. What are you talking about? I mean, aid means one. Why can't it mean one witness? We don't even have one witness. Maybe it means afilo echad. No, that's why the Torah says. Now later on, the Gemara is going to say, well, if you don't even have one witness, why are we talking about whether she was raped? You don't have anything. That we'll ask in a moment. But says the Gemara, we know that the word aid means two witnesses. It means edus. Lo yakum aid echad be'ish. I mean, look, if it says lo yakum aid be'ish, so then doesn't that mean by definition lo yakum aid echad be'ish? Why do you have to stress lo yakum aid echad be'ish? If the word aid meant an aid echad, that's the whole point. The Torah is gufa teaching you over here. If I want to talk about a single witness, I don't call it an aid. I call it an aid echad to make it clear that we're talking about a single witness. Any other time that I use the word aid, I mean aidut, which is two witnesses. That's the point. Zekomakam shenemar aid, by definition, we already have two. Areikan shenayim. Achiv rot lecha katuv echad, unless I specify, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I specify one. Therefore, when the Torah says, okay, aid einba, that means there aren't two witnesses, but there's only one witness, and she wasn't raped. Oh, why are we talking about rape? You only have one witness. That's the point. Because if you do have that one, vihilo nitvasa, if she wasn't raped, then there's the presumptive asura, and she can no longer drink. Otherwise, the pasuk makes no sense at all. We wouldn't be talking about whether she was nitvasa. Clear proof. Yes, says Gemara, it is clear proof, but I don't understand what you were talking about. If aid meant even one, then how would you have understood the pasuk? What, we need to get this zebnei av that it says aid echad be'ish. For that, I would have thought that when the Torah said, and we don't have an aid, we mean we don't even have a single aid. So then what does it mean when it says v'hilo nitvasa? So then b'may mitasra, how did she become asur? We don't know anything about this. So she became asura on the basis of what? Of kinui without stira? No. This would be something else. I would have understood the pasuk like this. I would have thought that the words aid einba means aid ein ne'emanba. That we do not believe aid einba. It's not saying we didn't even have a single witness about this. It would have meant aid einba. One witness would not be enough. And therefore we have two witnesses we would need. And because of that, we're saying vihilo nitfasa. And then that would be telling us that dafka aid einba means you need to aid him to be made. So therefore, now that we understand it this way from the pasuk, it's telling us that actually, now that we know aid means two, it means that not that two witnesses cannot believe them. That's crazy. Of course, two witnesses are believed. It's saying that there weren't two witnesses, not aid einba. There is no relevant aidas to her. Okay. So, excuse me, but that doesn't make any sense to me either. What do you mean? Aid einba means aid eino ne'manba? I don't know. So what are you saying? Aid echad is not ne'man, and therefore what? You need two aidim? Of course you need two aidim, for God's sake. Why would I need a pasuk to say aid einba to tell me you need two aidim? The Torah says you always need two aidim. Let the pasuk just not say anything about Adas. Lishtok kromina. And then we would have Baruch Avram opening up his eyes, and then he could be an aid, because you need to be able to see, not guess. And then I would have already known, since it says davar in both places. We have davar mimamon. So it says, al pishnei edim yakum davar. And it says, kimat saba erva davar. So that means in Inyanim of Erva, we need two witnesses the same way that we need two witnesses when it comes to Edus in court about a monetary issue. And Ana Yadana, Midadavia Koladuchu Betorah. I mean, it's a given that you need two Aidim. Why would the Torah possibly have needed to tell me eight Aidim, but don't believe one Aid? Of course they don't believe one Aid. It's true. No, I still would need it. I mean, none of it is true, because in the end we know that when it says eid ein ba, it means edut ein ba. Fine, but what were we thinking? Remember, don't forget, we're only looking at what were we thinking. Well, we were thinking that the Torah might be saying, don't believe one witness, because I might have thought, Sakatatramina, maybe when it comes to a sota, we would believe one witness. Why would I? Deraglayim ladavar, we're back in Nazir again. Because there's raglayim ladavar, it seems like some kind of hanky-panky is going on. I mean, after all, Mrs. Robinson, everybody knows what they're tippy-toeing down there for. And therefore, we should believe, actually, one aid. And therefore, the Torah has to tell us that even though Arekina love and Istara and Lishaman Bayedachot, you would think we would believe one witness, we don't. And therefore, comes along to say, aid ain't ba, aid ain't a neman ba. That's what everybody thought. I mean, now I know it's not true. All of this is just the possibilities that led us to needing that drasha. Excuse me, but even that doesn't make sense. You could have thought that eid ein ba means that we don't believe an eid ein. How can you say now that that's actually what we're talking about? We don't believe her, and that what? Therefore, she's muteret? Is that what it means? So then why does it say she's a surah? Why does it start talking about she was raped or not raped? Why are we talking about rape if we're not believing the one witness? You're being totally inconsistent. Obviously, we're taking for granted that she's a surah. So there is still no way we could have read it to mean that there is no witness. I'm sorry. No. I'll tell you why. I still need the pasuk of Eid Echad to teach the Koma Kom Shenemar. I'll tell you. Because Itzrich, I would have thought that over here, it means Salkatat Ramina Ein Ne'eman Ba Ad the Ika Trey. That's what it's saying. We won't believe one witness. We need two witnesses. And once we would have established it with two witnesses, still we would have to establish another question. Was this a rape? A date rape? Or was it really something that she did? Betray Nami, we first will have to know, Hilo Nitfasa. That would be what Hilo Nitfasa or Lo Nitfasa means. Kamash Malanta. Therefore, it says, Lo Yakum Eid Echad Be'ish. That's the bottom line. Okay, so we had a machlokas in the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yoshua Aimer, Bekanela Al Pishnaim. And is also Mashkal Pishnaim, and Rabbi Eliezer holds that you can even be Mashka, meaning in terms of the Stira, that Stira can be even on the basis of himself, or the basis of an Eid Echad. So why does Rabbi Yeshua say that we need Dafka to have two witnesses for Stira? Because Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, V'hi nitma'a, the aid ein ba, which means aid ein ba, but that means ba below bikinui. There was no witnesses that came to say that she was actually nitma, but there were witnesses that came to say, so what did we learn from there? That when it comes to that, the aid ein ba means that we don't have two witnesses, but we can believe one witness, but that's binogea tuma. But that means that's only benogea the tuma, which is about what she did. But lo bikinui, and when it says ba, means dafka in terms of asring her about the actual tuma, that we don't need two witnesses, we have eight. And that we don't have two witnesses, but we do have one eight. But when it comes to stira, remember that that is not included, and therefore we would need two. Remember that this is all based on the way that we understood the pasuk, which is, V'yi lo nitma, then when we have V'yi nitma ve'ed ein ba, that we say that if that's the case, why does it say afterwards that V'yi lo nitvasa? So basically it means that we're certainly assuming that there was a problem because she's obviously tmeya. Why else are we talking about whether she was nitvasa or she wasn't nitvasa if nothing ever happened to her? So therefore, the way that we came out was saying that ein Eid ba vihilo nitfasa, that we don't have two Eidas, but we have one Eid, and now the only thing that remains to be determined is whether she was raped or not, but not whether there was actually a relationship between them. That's how we ended up understanding it. So since that's the import of the pasuk, then when it says ba, so it's coming to specify Eid ein ba about me, just say Eid ein. Eid ein ba means about this specific issue about the tumah, but the other issues, namely kinoi vestira, does require typical edut. So where does Reb Eliezer, how does he come to say that there is a need for shtei edim, but only by kinoi? But when it comes to stira, we don't need even one witness as believed, and for that matter, even the Baal himself is believed. So Reb Eliezer, all I could see from here is to say, ba, and not for something else. But that would be ba v'lo b'kinui. Masha inkin, when it comes to the question of whether we need two witnesses for the stira, I consider it to be the equivalent of tuma, because basically the stira itself is what this is all about. And that assuming that there was a stira, so then we're assuming that there was tuma in the stira, so that means that stira is the first step towards creating this iser, in which case I will not be mamayet from ba the stira, I will be mamayet the kinui. Well, I mean, the bottom line is that it does say ba, and the only place that we have the clear-cut meaning of eid ein ba is in terms of the tuma. So why don't you accept that what Rabbi Yeshua says, that ba should also mean ba velo b'stira? No, because I hold, says Rabbi Eliezer, that the stira and the tuma are basically one issue because the Torah puts them together. V'nistira v'hi nitma'a. Whatever's v'nistira v'hi nitma'a. So in other words, it's the stira per se, which is the sense of what's coming. That is that she was nitma'a. So then that means that the ba is not strong enough to stand up against the comparison that the Torah is making of the stira to the etzem tuma. So therefore, I say, let us learn ba, but limit it to ba v'lo b'kinui, and therefore kinui requires two eidim. Well, if you're going to say that, so then you have the same thing with the kinui. It says v'kinei et ishto v'hi nitma'a. So then that compares kinui to the same thing as tuma. So how come when Reb Eliezer reads those same words when it comes to v'nistira v'nitma, then already it's a big thing, and it means that ba cannot be referring to it. But when the pasuk says exactly the same words, when it says v'kinei v'nitma, so then obviously it should exclude both. Well, no, wait a minute. I mean, can't exclude both, right? It says ba. So ba is coming to exclude something. So now the question is, I say it doesn't exclude the stira, it only excludes the kinui. Because Omar Rahman, Amir Rahman Abba. Well, I don't know. So then how do you determine which one? I don't get it. So Umara Ita, what makes you say, I thought that you were basing it on the pasuk, and the pasuk was comparing stira to tuma. That made sense. But then when I realized that basically you're making your own determination. The pasuk compares kinoi to stira and stira, kinoi to tuma and stira to tuma. So you're the one who has to be making the choice. So could you please explain the choice? So maraita, what is the basis of your choice over here to say that ba only excludes kinoi from the need, from the acceptance of even one witness, and therefore means we need two witnesses and not kinoi? Well, I mean, I believe, says Reb Eliezer, that it's only reasonable to say, Mistavra, that stira is certainly more chomor, isn't it? I mean, if we're going to have a choice of whether we believe an eid echad for stira, or we believe an eid echad for kinui, I mean, what do you think is more roi to be machmer on? I mean, the stira is basically getting close to the actual tumah, right? So I just thought it was reasonable. Because the stira basically makes her asura until such time as she shosa. So until she drinks from the mayim ha'ma'orim, we treat stira as the equivalent of tuma. So then, okay, so if we're going to say that one of them is being compared that if an Eid Echad is good enough for the one, it's good enough for the other. I mean, it's reasonable that the one that's compared is the Stira, because the Stira has the same din as the actual Nitma. This is very reasonable. So what's your problem? No, I mean, I could look at it the other way. I could say, look, I mean, there's a way to look at the Kinui as being more Chomer. I mean, because basically, Stira itself wouldn't mean anything. Suppose a regular married woman is alone with a guy. She doesn't become Asura. So you can't tell me that Stira is the equivalent of Tuma. Stira is nothing. A man's wife was with somebody else, so therefore she becomes Asura. What are you, crazy? It doesn't mean a darn thing. Even with two witnesses, it doesn't mean a darn thing. It's just irrelevant. So the whole thing that makes it relevant is the Kinui. So then that should mean that the Kinui is more Chomer, because she can Ikar Garamla. I mean, the only thing that puts this whole thing into motion and that turns the Stira into something meaningful is the Kinui. So therefore, let's be Machmer on the Kinui. I mean, Kinui itself doesn't mean anything, does it? I mean, if there's no Stira, so then the Kinui is completely irrelevant. So Kinui Miika, I mean, is there any meaning to a Kinui? Of course not. So the only thing that really makes the difference is the Stira. You know, I mean, that doesn't prove anything. I mean, if there's no Kinui, I just showed you that the Stira is relevant. So, I mean, that what kind of argument is that? Ilaf Kinui Stira Mayahane. So can we forget about that? Because we're just, you know, talking past each other. So can you tell me what the Svara is? Yes, the Svara is that, look, Stira, to say that both of them are compared to Tuma is ridiculous, because in actual physical terms, the Stira is the Adchalta of the Tuma. I mean, basically, this is where she's beginning her relationship with this guy in an inappropriate fashion. So she's going in there with him to be alone. Okay, I mean, so that is very similar, isn't it, to actually being Nitma'a? I mean, Kinui is nothing. You say Kinui is meaningful because it sets an emotion. It's all very nice. But, I mean, it's certainly, if you're going to compare to the real idea of Tuma, where the Torah is accepting an Eid Echad, the thing to compare it to is Stira, which is an actual doing something that is similar to sleeping with the guy. It's just short of sleeping with the guy in these circumstances. And because of that, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that where do you need Shnei Eidim? That's only in terms of Kinui. But when it comes to the Stira, since the Torah was Mamayit, was Maksha rather, the idea of Stira to Tuma, even one Eid is enough. And therefore, it's only reasonable that, I mean, the point of the Eid is that we have someone who's saying, we don't have, there's no din of a Eidut Kshera. So if that's the case, once it's one Eid, so the husband himself is also the same thing. And therefore, the husband can say that she was an Esteret. All of this description of the machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer is actually only one version of the machlokas. There's another way in a braita where Rabbi Eliezer's shita is exactly the opposite of what it is over here. And that goes like this, that matnitin, our mission is not like this braita. The loki aitana, the tanya. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yuda, Eimer, Mishum, Rabbi Eliezer. So this is Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yuda's version of Rabbi Eliezer Shita. Rabbi Eliezer Shita over here is, again, that when it comes to the Kinui, we do need to aid him, and that is Maitet Rabbi Yeshua. And when it comes to the Stira, we don't need to aid him. And we can even have an Eid Echad or the Baal himself, right? When you take a look at this Mishnah, and you'll see that Rabbi Eliezer Shita, according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, is very different indeed, and actually is the opposite. And because Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, HaMekaneli Ishto Mikanao Pied Echad, O Piatzmo. The Kinui, according to this version, the Kinui indeed is that which can be done even with an Eid Echad, and therefore even on his own. And if it's coming, however, to bring her to be drinking, that means that we already know that there's a Stira, then we need Shnei Eidim. So it's the exact opposite of what we said before. Okay, so then that means that the very logic that we had brought up before as to whether we should see the kinui as being the central, putting everything in motion, and we should see the stira, rather, as that which we're being mimayit, is indeed over here exactly the opposite. And it was the way that we suggested to Rebbe Eliezer how to look at it. Now, the Chachamim said about this, well, that's crazy, because L'divrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda ein l'davar sof. I mean, this is nuts. If the guy himself is going to be believed, so then, I mean, you're putting all of the power in the husband's hands to do what he could claim whatever he wants, because there never needs to be anything that is outside of his words and his statement that is going to be necessary for him to create these problems. He can say, well, I was mekaneher. I mean, any woman is going to be alone for a moment with a guy at one point or another. I mean, who's machbit about getting into an elevator with somebody? I don't know, right? We're going to see. It doesn't take much of a time to be considered to be stira. So then this guy, maybe, you know, all he needs to do is bring two witnesses. Your wife went into the elevator. Oh, my God, I had given her kinoi. You have any proof? No, I don't need proof. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't need any proof. And we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. So, I mean, so then ain't let ever self. I mean, there's absolutely no way to prevent that kind of thing from happening. This is where the Gemara is going to explain it later. Now, what's the basis of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda in Rabbi Eliezer that we need that we need two witnesses for stira, exactly as we said. Omar kra, ba below bistira. So when it comes to stira, so then you need two witnesses. But when it comes to kinui, then you don't need two witnesses, because it's compared to tuma, like we said before. But wait, why don't we say ba velo bikinui? Well, we'll go through the whole thing again. Kinui is compared to tuma, because it says vikinei tishtovi nidma. And of course, over here, we say the same thing in the inverse, but stira is also compared to tuma. Tichtivin istravi nidma. Ah, but here you see. Ahu, lekama shiur stira, kidei tuma hudiata. The fact that it says v'nistravehi nitma'a, that is absolutely necessary to teach a clear-cut halacha, and it's not coming in any way to address the question of whether ba should be applicable. And what is that? Well, when we say nistara, we need to know that in order to determine whether this is considered to be stira, it needs to be a stira in which we could say that she was nitma'a. That's the point. So long enough for her to actually have had relations with this guy. We'll see what that implies, relations. But whatever it is kidei tum'a. Okay. So I didn't understand, by the way, what you said. The Chachomim said, according to the way Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says things, ain't ledover sof. Can you explain that? What do you mean? My new, I mean that, look, sometime, at one point or another, if he gets mad at her, he can always claim that even though he was never mekana her, zimna delo mekana, and he'll claim, well, I was mekana her, because it's no problem to find witnesses that his wife went into an elevator with a guy, right? But, I mean, couldn't you say that also about our Mishnah? I mean, our Mishnah also, if Rebbe Eliezer, I agree it's not as drastic, but if Rebbe Eliezer says that we believe the husband, so hala mishnatenu yesh l'davar sof. That's something that makes sense. That a husband at any point, after he sets his wife up by giving her this kinui, so at any point he can claim, I saw her alone with the guy. So, I mean, that's just as crazy, isn't it? I mean, if he gets mad at her, he can always do that, because sometimes she never was in stira, and he can say, I did, I saw her being soteret. It's true that there's an advantage in the Taina against Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, because over there, I mean, he could just come out of nowhere, because you can always find people to say that she was nisteret, because she always will be. Mashenkin, over here, it has to be set up in advance, because he would need to be mekana her in front of two witnesses, But then, over the next 20 years, anytime that he wants to, he can claim that she was in his territory. Okay, but it's a lot easier to do that if you don't need to set it up in advance with two witnesses for the keynote. So, nonetheless, it still seems to put too much power in the hands of the Baal. I mean, so why is it only, how come nobody brought that up when it comes to our mission? Then they only brought it up in the extreme case of the way Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda was learning Rabbi Eliezer. Why? You're right. We said it over wrong. The correct way of saying what the Chachomim tainted against Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, was, well, this doesn't solve anything, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda's new approach to Rabbi Eliezer, because he also doesn't make any sense, because according to him, also, ein l'davar sof. What? What do you mean, also? Af l'divrei Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, what? And I don't even need to tell you our Mishnah's got a problem. No, it's the other way around. The Mishnah is a much lesser problem, right? Because it needs setting up in advance because you needed to have two witnesses for the Kina. So what do you mean? Even, I mean, like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda was apparently coming to cure the problem of the Mishnah. On the contrary, it only becomes evident of how nuts the Shita is because of what it's going to cause in terms of dissolving marriages. It was only clear when Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda was talking about Rabbi Eliezer. Then we realize, you know, but I mean, it's still a problem even for the Mishnah, but the way you're saying it, it's even for Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, it's the exact opposite. Adarabba. It should say, at least, L'Mishnatenu Ika Ikar. I mean, over here, there's a basis because it needs to be set up before. So there was clearly a kinui at one point in front of witnesses. Mashenken, the way Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is learning, you don't need any grounds whatsoever for just coming along and claiming that your wife is a sota. Hatam leka ikar. We don't need any kind of testimony when it comes to kinui. So therefore, he doesn't need to set it up. He could claim it at any time, and it's not a problem to find testimony for stira. Okay, you're right about that also. let me amend it properly, okay? What it was that Rabbi Yochanan was quoted as, the correct version reads like this. The truth is, now we can recognize that Rabbi Eliezer's approach, either way, is giving way too much, in practical terms, way too much power to the Baal by providing him with nemonis, whether it's for the kinui or whether it's for the stira. Both of them is going to be, whoa, literally ein l'davar sof. What are you going to do about it? Omer Rabbi Chanina Misura, you should know that there's some very important halakha l'maisa that's based on this. Because look, a person nowadays, I mean, all of this is talking about what would actually trigger the need for the mesota, right? Okay, so I understand. We're talking about triggering the mesota, and she'll have to go to Beis HaMikdash, and it'll be a real problem, and so on and so forth. Okay, but that's a minor problem compared to what's going on today. Because if a person would say to his wife, today, don't be alone with such and such a guy. And he says it to her without anybody present, right? So then what happens if she is in hysteric with the guy? And then what if the halacha would be, like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda? I mean, we don't have a bezdin now that's going to paskin that. We don't have somebody to tell us that you don't have to worry at all about Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. So then, if in fact we are going to paskin that way, so then what's going to happen is that we're going to aser that woman forever. It's unbelievable. What are you gonna do? Now, many of the Paiskim actually write that even Bidiavad, if you did that, even Beinola Veina, and she was Nistera, so then she would be Osir forever, because we don't have any Mayim Lashkota, and the Rambam actually paskins like that. The Rashba paskins like that. So when we say maybe, okay, everybody says, what do you mean? Why should we say that? Isn't Halacha always like Rabbi Yeshua, excuse me, or like the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer? So why in the world would we say such a psak? Because Rambam himself was posek. Himself, he paskin that you need stira pishnayim. And af alpikain, he writes that she would be asura. Because since Rish Lakish says that, and Rav Chanina Misura said Dilma Kaimalon, apparently there's a real suffix over here. So what are you going to do? Fine. There's a lot of tremendous discussion about this issue, as you can imagine, because it happens all the time. A guy's wife is working in an office with a boss that is not exactly trustworthy, you know? So this Kailal husband tells his wife, listen, you really shouldn't go in to be alone with that guy. That guy's dangerous. Never let the office door close on you. That happens all the time. And the question is, if that would be considered to be a kinoi, and in fact it turns out that she's alone with the guy, you're in big trouble. And the Rambam is saying that she's a surah le'olam. So you can just imagine how problematic this is in terms of, you know, people that are machmir. Okay, anyway, this is like a disaster. Omer Reish Lakish, this lashon of kinui, what exactly does it mean? Because kinui usually has to do with something that is, I don't know, jealousy, something that has to do with resentment, anger. It's not like just a simple thing of warning. It has much more to it than that. It means there's already something churning over here, something negative. So what would that be? Malashon kinui, davar hamatil kina beino levein acherim. Basically, it's something that is going to cause her relationships with the world to break down. Okay, why would that be? So apparently, Reish Lakish must hold that kinui could be even al pi atzmo. So in other words, Reish Lakish himself apparently goes aliba to Rebbe Eliezer according to where Rebbe Yehuda learned Rebbe Eliezer, which is exactly what the Or Sameach was talking about in terms of explaining the Rambam. Where does the Rambam come from? It comes from Reish Lakish. So even though normally we would have said it's enough, if you see that Reish Lakish says that the meaning of kina is that it's going to get her into trouble with all of her relationships, why would that be true? Because kuli amalo yade dekanila, people don't know why all of a sudden this woman is acting so hoity-toity. She doesn't get involved with anybody. She doesn't talk with people anymore. All of a sudden she's become standoffish. Well, of course she's become standoffish. She knows her husband suspects her of making out with other men, so she feels like a total idiot everywhere she goes. I mean, I don't know. What is he thinking? What's he going to say? It's awful. So basically, all of her relationships are messed up because of this. Nobody knows about it, because according to the way that Rabbi Yosef Rabbiud understood Rabbi Eliezer, the whole thing could have happened in private. And therefore, it's going to turn into something that the whole town's going to be talking about, her sudden change in the way she treats people, and she doesn't trust anybody anymore. And it's awful. It's a very terrible thing to do. So they say, what the heck's going on over here with this woman? Maidika madika badla. And because of that, they're going to get really angry with her, and all kinds of relationships are going to break down with everybody. That's Reish Lakish's approach, which only works if the kinui can be done in private. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda bar Rav Shlemi Yomishmida Abaya says, no, the word kinui is, you're right, it's implies that there's some kind of very bad things going on, but that does not mean between her and other people. It means between her and her husband. So he holds that Kinui is al pishnai. And therefore, everybody knows, oh my God, that poor woman, she's got this nut of a husband who goes around and tells her in front of witnesses not to be alone with people. No wonder the poor girl is sitting there feeling like a total fool and doesn't want to talk to anybody. So she now is furious with her husband. Their whole relationship breaks down. And therefore, we're using the word of Kinui in the sense that it's going to destroy their relationship. Because imagine what she feels when everybody knows the way that he's treating her.